This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's a question captivating the American church. Should politicians who support abortion rights be denied communion? Biden, who is only the second Catholic president, is the first to hold the office and endorse a pro-abortion agenda.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, changing gears here. I'm going to revisit the whole issue of UAPs again in the not-too-distant future. Congressman Dan Lipinski is going to be stopping by in a second, but there's been a lot of fallout from the report you just heard there from Current News and from NetTV. And I just want to bring up the speed on it. It's an important issue for us as Catholics. It's an important issue, I think, just in general. And if you're not familiar with what's going on, let me just fill you in. A couple of weeks ago, after the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops voted to start drafting a document on worthy reception of Holy Communion, 60 Democrat members of Congress released what was called a statement of principles. And it's about 4 pages. It's a 4-page document that uses what I like to call weasel words, right? These weasel words and phrases to get around the fact that these politicians all support abortion as a national policy. And here's just one way they do this. They say this: in all these issues, we seek the church's guidance and assistance, but we believe also in the primacy of conscience and recognizes the church's role in providing moral leadership. We acknowledge and accept the tension that comes with being in disagreement with the church in some areas. Tension, right? What a nice way of putting it. I'm telling you, I said this before. I need to go to whatever school they're taught to speak like this and write like this. I wish I had this ability, right? Tension. Of course, they totally downplay the church's role in life. And it's not just to provide moral leadership, but it's to proclaim the truth of Jesus Christ, right? The implications of that truth in a very definitive way. And look, just to be clear, I'm not saying that all moral dilemmas have a definitive nature, but abortion, you know, isn't one of those. I mean, it's crystal clear that abortion, the deliberate and direct killing of an unborn child, that's wrong. And it's wrong all the time. And that's what the church teaches. It doesn't get more black and white than that. And in other words, these politicians, what they're trying to do is exempt themselves from being scrutinized by their bishops over the support of abortion. And I got to praise one bishop, several. Bishop Cousins is going to be stopping by a little later in the hour. But Archbishop Cordiglione of San Francisco, who's been on this program, Bishop Thomas Papraki, another great voice. Bishop Cordiglione, he's been such a fierce advocate of worthy reception of the Eucharist. And he's been leading the charge to bring, you know, with the term they use is called Eucharistic coherence for the church. This is what he said on Current News. Listen to this.
Yes, so we have this kind of incongruence now in with not understanding what it means to receive communion. Many Catholics have a very kind of Protestant notion that it's more like table fellowship, but it means that it's Christ's sacrifice made present to us. We unite our sacrifice with Christ. Dying with Christ means dying to sin. So receiving communion is an act by which we profess that we believe what the church believes, and we're living our life accordingly. So if we fall, we all fall. That's why we have the other sacrament, reconciliation, so we can be put back in a state of grace. But to intentionally deny any of the church's teaching and receive communion is a lack of integrity, lack of coherence.
All right, again, that was Archbishop Cordiglione. Dan Lipinski, he's a former member of Congress. He's also a faithful Catholic and a member of the Democrat Party. He represented the 8th Congressional District in Illinois up until earlier this year, and we spoke to him about that. He was one of those rare voices in the Democratic Party that spoke truth when it came to life, and I really believe he lost his position over it. He had successfully represented his district for years. And this is how wacky things got, right? This is how divisive this issue is, and how blinding. His own party, right? His own party opposed him. Why? Because he was pro-life. He didn't weasel around that. He spoke truth. And as a result, they lobbied against him. He recently wrote a column for First Things magazine about the statement of principles. If you want to check him out, he's got a website, danlipinski.com. And that's spelled L-I-P-I-N-S-K-I, okay? Lipinski, L-I-P-I-N-S-K-I. So it's danlipinski.com. And he just did an interview with The Pillar as well. And, you know, we've spoken about that great publication in the past. You can check that out online. Patrick, it's Catholic Pillar, right? I think there's a website for them, catholicpillar.com. But do a search for The Pillar. It'll come up. Congressman Lipinski, thank you for your support of life, and thank you for being here. It's always good to talk with you.
It's always good to be with you, Drew.
Thank you. And by the way, my producers are telling me the website is pillarcatholic.com. Gosh, this issue is so frustrating for me. You know, you say that two parties in our country have become fundamentalist religious organizations, and I'd love you to unpack that and explain that, because I would tend to agree with you.
Well, it really has happened to a great extent in the last 4 or 5 years that both parties now, they have their set of doctrine of enforcing that on anyone who wants to run for office under the party banner. We have basically, if you're running an election, if you're voting an election, you usually have to vote for a Democrat or a Republican. But both sides, and this is partisanship, has become something that is, it's really an attachment that is beyond what have seen in the past. And each side sees the other side as evil. And, you know, Americans are presented, you need to choose one of these two sides. And you have to subscribe to every belief that they put out there. And I think this is bad for our country. Our government does not work the way government was set up under the Constitution. I used to be a political science professor, and government was set up so that to require deliberation and compromise. It doesn't work when we have these two parties that are sectarian. And the other, more importantly, it's a danger for a lot of Catholics, I believe, because we have to continue to follow the doctrine of the church and not feel like we choose one of the parties, you know, either party, Democrat or Republican party, and then decide, well, all of our beliefs have to follow from that. That's wrong. This idea in the statement of principles from the 60 Democratic members of Congress that essentially are saying we understand that the party, you know, our party doctrine is different from that of the church. Well, the answer to that is not to change the church's doctrine, but to change the party. And that's what I tried to do. And that's why the abortion industry spent $6 million to get rid of me. And after a close call in 2018, they did in 2020.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. You have an amazing story. I hope you write a book about what you went through. It'll be a great read and an eye-opener.
I'm writing it right now.
Well, good. I think people need to read it. They need to see what's going on, you know, behind the scenes there. And it's not healthy for our republic, to be honest with you. You know, when you've got 60 Democrat, House Democrats, issuing a statement of principle in response to the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops' vote to proceed with just a teaching document on the Eucharist. That's what the bishops are supposed to do. It makes me wonder. I mean, if you're Catholic, you should understand what the Catholic Church teaches. If you're going to call yourself a Catholic, you will live by those principles, as I know you do. What happens? Help me understand this, because it doesn't make any sense to me how 60 intelligent people who are elected to high office could sign off on a document like that and what they're hoping to achieve when they claim that the Eucharist is being used as a weapon and they want to still support a woman's so-called legal access to abortion, and, you know, that this is contradictory. what's the thought process behind this? I mean, how can 60 people like this all sign off on a document yet still call themselves Catholic?
Well, this really isn't anything new. I mean, we've been seeing this for years. It's just that this was put together succinctly in one place. I don't know who wrote this. I know how things go when you're a member of Congress and someone, you know, someone will write something and they'll come to you and ask you to sign on to it. And some members read more closely than others do. But this, you know, sort of is just in keeping with what the Democratic Party now is the party line in what members of Congress are expected, if they're a Democrat, to support. And they, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you what they were each thinking. But this is not something new. And I heard this for years and from some Catholics and from people who are, you know, priests and religious who, you know, basically were saying, well, yeah, we understand this is all part of Catholic social teaching, but you know, abortion is just one issue, and as long as you're doing enough to you're spending enough money to take care of the poor or, you know, other things that are the unborn. But there's a lot of people trying to sow confusion out there, you know, I wrote that you have to. I'm not excusing this statement, but, you know, the bishops really need to understand the pressure that's on these members of Congress, and they are being threatened that their career will be over in politics. They're going to be attacked in an election like I was. And the bishops need to speak the truth, though. That's what we have as Catholics on our side. It's the truth.
I agree with you. But, you know, when it comes to those Catholic politicians, what's it merit a man to gain the whole world but lose his soul in the process? I don't know how you can advocate for the destruction of innocent life. And if God's giving you the platform of that office, you should use it as such. But I do understand your position with the bishops. And this is a great time for the church, great time for our bishops to lead. You outlined a few things that the bishops should address in their upcoming statement. One of those was the difference in kind and not degree between direct attacks on human life and then other issues. And I know this is something that comes up all the time, like helping the poor. Maybe you can articulate or shed some light on that. I mean, life, of course, is of paramount importance, but there are other life issues as well, many people claim. So give me your take.
Well, again, as Catholics, we need to live out all of Catholic social teaching. And it's very clear that means protecting the life of the unborn. We also have to, we are called to care for the poor, but the issue becomes then, well, what does that mean when it comes to federal policy? And, you know, I'm good friends with Paul Ryan and you know, former Speaker of the House, and you know, there were budgets when he was chairman of the Budget Committee and then Speaker of the House, Republican budgets that were put forward that cut funding for some government programs for that provided food assistance and other things for the poor. And I didn't support those because I did not think that was a good policy. But I didn't think Paul Ryan was a bad Catholic. I mean, we had discussions about this. And so it's really a matter of those things are to what extent, to what role does the government play? And no one knows what, no one can say without question what the right answer is to that.
Yeah.
We do know that we need to, we will be judged on how we provide for the least of us.
Yeah.
And that's not as clear, though, is what it means, you know, taking the life of the unborn. That's very clear.
Yeah, of course. And you know, the right to life always comes first. Without that right to life, you don't have the right to immigration, you know, the right to any of these other things, health care, et cetera, which are are important as well. You talk about primacy of conscience, Congressman Lipinski. Expand on that, if you could, and the church's take on that.
Well, it really, honestly, if you look at what the church has said about primacy of conscience, you could take that, and people certainly do take that, and in the statement of principles, it was taken to be, well, if I feel that differently than the church, even on settled church doctrine, then I need to follow that. I need to follow my conscience. But the church teaches that it has to be a well-informed conscience. And in also in keeping with the doctrine of the Catholic Church. So it is understandable, that's a way that something that can be used for people to say, well, I feel differently. So that's my conscience telling me that I'm right and the church is wrong. But we all know that that's not what the church means by the primacy of of conscience. And it, this is something that this whole process, I spent, this statement came out. I was asked to write this piece, and I spent 4 or 5 days working on this. I went back to look at the 2006 document that the USCCB put out, and it talked clearly about needing to be in a state of grace in order to be worthy to receive Holy Communion, and what that means. That document kind of disappeared, but it was good for me to go back and read that. I wrote part of this in an adoration chapel at our church. I mean, and it really forced me to think about what I understand about the Eucharist and Jesus Christ in the Eucharist. And that is Jesus Christ in reception of Holy Communion and what that means. And I think that's really the purpose of this teaching document, is to teach all of us Catholics. It's not just what the media want to look at, the political part of it. That's important.
Right.
But it's for all of us.
Yeah, I agree. And I tend to think we're at a good point here. I think with the bishops coming out with a document in November and campaigns underway to revitalize and recatechize a lot of people on the Eucharist, things are going to change. We'll see how all this pans out. You've got Joe Biden, who appears to really love his faith, goes to Mass all the time, has his rosary, but then again votes, along with Nancy Pelosi and others, they advance things that are diametrically opposed to the teachings of our faith. It can be confusing to a lot of people. And there are a lot of people who are trying to get the church to change her teachings to conform to political positions. That's never going to happen, is it? I mean, we're seeing that. It almost seems like we're seeing that more and more. I think of these 60 congresspeople who wrote that letter and signed off to our nation's bishops. You clearly, I know, see the problem with that, don't you?
Well, as I was saying earlier, a lot of people unfortunately make their partisanship their religion, and they then think that everything should conform to that, including the Catholic Church. And it's something that it's even more important now for the church to speak out on what it means to be Catholic and what we believe.
You're a Democrat, and you've ran for office. I just wonder about the future of certain political parties. I believe evil ultimately feeds on itself, and evil collapses. Can a political party that in its official statement supports the destruction of human life survive? I mean, and I've often said this, I'm not about doing away with the Democrat Party. I think we need men like you, women, who defend life and who hold true to these moral principles in both parties. It's healthy for our nation. A one-party system would be terrible. But can the Democrat Party survive with its current platform?
Well, one of the reasons I stayed in the Democratic Party was I knew I had an important voice in the party. Though I was one of 435 votes in the House, it was clear that the abortion lobby did not like my voice in the Democratic Party. For them to spend $6 million and all the resources they put in to defeat me showed how much they didn't like having my voice in the party. But look, 25 to between a quarter and a third of people of Americans call themselves Democrats. They also say that they are pro-life. So between a quarter and a third, the leadership, unfortunately, does not reflect that at all. I think that it would be terrible for the pro-life movement to be a one-party movement. Yeah. It is. Yeah. It would really be detrimental to our protection of the unborn for that to happen. And that's why we need to change the party. And I know there's a lot of young people. I've been going out over the last few years, and now that things are opening up again, hopefully they'll be going to speak to some more on some more college campuses. There are a lot of people, young people, who say, I line up with the Democratic Party on almost everything, but I'm pro-life.
Yeah,
we can't lose those people. We can't allow them to feel like, well, they can't be pro-life or give up on being pro-life.
I gotcha. Let's do this. I have a minute or two left before we take a break. I want to jump into a call or two for you, Congressman. My guest, Congressman Dan Lipinski. I want to go to Downers Grove, Illinois, is on deck. Dan, good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Dan, and good afternoon, Drew. Dan, we've met several times. In fact, in line at confession, I think it was the last time we met. But my big question for you is, are you going to run again? Because when your seat was up for election, the kind of COVID hit, and I think it was unfairly gained, through people being afraid to vote and stuff like that. So would you run as a Democrat or Republican again?
I am not planning on running again. The next big thing that's going to happen is the new map. The redistricting is going to happen, and it'll be a new map come out. I'm watching that because I never say never, but right now I'm really focused on writing and on Catholic evangelization. But again, I never say never. It was an honor and privilege to be a member of Congress for 16 years. I don't like the fact it's become so top-down run.
Yeah,
that was very frustrating to me. No matter which party I was in, it would have been a problem. So that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Well, Dan, thank you for the call. I got to leave it right there. And Congressman Lipinski, thank you for your witness. Keep up the good fight. Like Dan, it'd be great to see good Catholics in office. Always great to hear of a constituent, I guess, beating you in line for confession. That should give a lot of hope. Your website, people want to follow you, get plugged in. It's danlipinski.com. You can check out Congressman Lipinski there. Stay with me when we come back. Bishop Cousins will be stopping by. We'll talk with him, too.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Catholic bishops are moving on this resolution that would prevent you and others who've supported abortion from receiving communion. Are you concerned about the rift in the Catholic Church, and how do you feel personally about that?
That's a private matter, and I don't think that's going to happen. Thank you.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's so good to be here with you today. Look, this is such an important issue. It really is. As a Catholic, I am so glad that this is being discussed. And we just had Congressman Lipinski on. You just heard about those so-called statement of principles that 60 members of Congress had signed. And what it says to me as I sit back, and I'm not judging anyone, but again, you don't achieve high office without a modicum of intelligence, right? And if you're Catholic, you understand the source and the summit of our faith is the Eucharist. You know. I mean, I think it's a cop-out for people to say, oh, I didn't know that. if that's the case, then you know what? We need to recatechize. We need these congresspeople. We need our educators. We need others to really understand what the Eucharist is, what it's all about. It's the body, the blood, the soul, the divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. Think about that. It's not some bland-tasting way for representing something somebody told you to do in remembrance of him 2,000 years ago. It's the body and blood. It's the soul and divinity of Jesus Christ, the second person of the Holy Trinity. And we ignore this. We poo-poo it. We play it down. We act like that's not what we believe. It's a shame on those Congress, you know, persons, if you will. I've been praying. I was actually before the Lord the other day in adoration, and by name I prayed for our congresspeople. By name I prayed for our Speaker of the House, for our president. And I think we need to do that. And look, it's not just Democrats. It's not a political issue, and I hope it doesn't come off as that. You have sons and daughters. I have sons and daughters, right? We have siblings. We have friends and neighbors who fall to the same camp. We've got to take the plank out of our own eye before we take the speck out of someone else's. How many times have we not respected the true presence? How many times have we unworthily received the Blessed Sacrament? It's easy to throw stones at the president. You see his agenda. You see his, you know, professing his faith. It's easy to do that, but I think we also have to look in the mirror sometimes. It's not just about our elected officials. It's also about us. And we're living, I think, in a really special time, to be honest with you. A lot of Catholics don't believe in the true presence. We've talked about this poll study that's been done almost ad nauseum, right? We've talked about how Pew did this research study, and they found that not even a third of Catholics believe that during the Mass, the bread and wine actually become the body and blood of Jesus Christ. You know what? I'm glad they did that, because it was a wake-up call for a lot of our bishops. As part of their meeting a couple weeks ago, there was a discussion about a program to start what one bishop has now termed Eucharistic revival. And you know what? This gives me such hope. I said this to before. We're in a wonderful time. As darkness, you know, continues to spread, I think grace abounds all the more. And I think this is such a great moment in the church. It's a great moment for our bishops to truly lead, to catechize, to be the shepherds that God calls them to. And it's a great opportunity for us not only to, you know, deepen our understanding and our love for the Eucharist, but to make sure our loved ones, especially our children, do as well. I believe we're going to see a Eucharistic revival in this country, and I think it's going to be good for our republic. I think it's going to be good. If we continue to go down this path, the results aren't going to be good. But I really think that we live in a time of special grace. I think this is an anointed time. And I'm so grateful for our heroic bishops. You know, I played Archbishop Cordiglione. You've heard Bishop Abbracchio on the air here, Bishop Brickin. Bishop Andrew Cousins is another one of those heroes. And I'm just honored to be able to broadcast in his diocese. He's the auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. And he chairs the Committee on Evangelization for the USCCB, for the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And he joins us today. And, of course, if you want to join us, you can dial in 888-914-9149. I'm sure he'd be glad to talk to you as well. Your Excellency, thank you for what you do. It's so good to have you on the air with me today.
Thank you, Drew. I'm delighted to be with you. And couldn't agree more with what you're saying about the fact of this being a season of grace, and in particular, amen, a season of grace that the Lord wants us to lift up his presence in the Eucharist so that he can draw people to himself.
Yeah. And I love it. I think this is going to be a great moment in the church here in our country. I really do. I often share a story, Your Excellency. I went to grade school with a friend. We went through 8 years of this grade school together, right? And we went our own ways. I went on to Catholic high school and then the college, and et cetera. We got together after I had graduated. We started playing racquetball together. And we went out for a beer afterwards. And for some reason, you know, the Eucharist came up. And he said to me, this is a guy who, you know, received the Eucharist when I did. He said, that's not really Jesus. He said, do this in remembrance of me. And I thought, what? No, no. And I went in to explain the faith. And I figured, you know, there's been bad catechesis. There have been people who've lost their way. There's people who have trouble with that reality. But I think we live in a great time where those souls like him, he's a good person, he lost his way. Where, you know, government officials who profess, you know, their Catholic faith are going to really have an opportunity to come to know the truth, and we're going to bridge that catechetical gap, I think, that some people have. I'd love to know what you envision and how this whole idea of starting a Eucharistic revival came about.
Yeah, you know, you painted the right picture, which is, and this makes the point that this is so much deeper than a political issue, that this is the bishops were concerned about this starting way back in October 2019, and Bishop Barron, who chaired the Committee on Evangelization and Catechesis before I did, he had already proposed a Eucharistic revival in January of 2019, and he met with several committee chairs. I was a part of that meeting where we talked about what we might do, where we might follow a process that would affect the church at every level, the parish level, the diocesan level, and then the national level. But we were already talking about that even before COVID hit. And it was supposed to be talked about at the June meeting in 2019, but COVID canceled that meeting. And we ended up discussing it in November of 2020 at the regional meetings with the bishops. And many bishops called this a providential fact that we were already thinking about this. And the COVID crisis has only amplified the need for it. And so really, that's why I got to work on it as the chair of the Committee on Evangelization and Catechesis starting in January. And we've been talking with national leaders around the country, forming partnerships with basically Catholic apostolates and lay leaders to try to bring them together around what is really the heart of the faith for all of us, which is Christ's presence in the Eucharist, and to ask their support and help over the period of the next 4 years to develop a revival. So the plan is pretty simple, but I expect it to have a big impact. The plan is in Corpus Christi of 2022 will launch this national Eucharistic revival, and it'll start with diocesan celebrations and a year of diocesan celebrations. So you could imagine, you know, nights of adoration and prayer happening in different corners of the diocese. You could imagine courses that we would offer for parish leaders who want to go deeper in the catechesis around the Eucharist. You could imagine days of renewal for priests, really inviting priests to remember this great gift of the Eucharist that is in their hands every day. Yeah. And then after that year of diocesan renewal, really then parish renewal. So inviting parishes to develop patterns of adoration, inviting parishes to do better catechesis of their people. So, and we're going to produce really high quality catechetical materials that we can deliver for free over the internet, of course. And then we can invite people to put these excellent catechetical materials into place at all levels, you know, for the young people, for the teenagers, for the young adults, for the leaders of the parish. And then all of that then culminating in the summer of 2024 with a National Eucharistic Congress. You know, we used to have National Eucharistic Congresses in this country that were quite large. You know, if you go back to the 40s and 50s, you're talking about 500,000 people in Cincinnati or New Orleans, and people who came together to honor the Eucharist. And it was this truth that we know as a church, this is our greatest gift, the Eucharist. And every now and then we have to remind ourselves of that. And by reminding ourselves of that, we lift up this gift. And as we know, when the Lord is lifted up, he draws people to himself. And so that's really what I expect to happen, is that after that national event, we'll hopefully have more than 100,000 people who get sent home on fire with love for the Eucharist, who then want to draw others into this great gift. Yeah, you know, this is the thing that makes us Catholics, and that's what's such a joy about it.
I love it. I'm excited. I really am. I see light on the horizon. I think the revival is such a great term to use. When I saw that, I thought, man, that's not a Catholic term. Revival, it conjures up, you know, for me, images of a tent meeting and some emotionalism, right? But I love it. I think, you know, it's exactly what it is, infusing some life and vitality and, you know, pulling back the blinders and letting people really know the treasure and the gift that we have in the Eucharist. Who came up with that? How did that title come about, revival? I think it's a great term.
You know, I can't remember who came up with it first, but as soon as I heard it, I thought that's exactly what we're doing, because it means two things.
Yeah.
We're bringing something back to life, which is the body of Christ, right? We're reviving that, but we're also setting a fire. And I agree with you. You know, devotion, which is external signs of love, this is a Catholic thing. This is not a Pentecostal thing or a Protestant thing. We understand the need for devotion. And when we, you know, when we kneel before, when we bow before the Blessed Sacrament, those external signs of love increase our internal signs of love.
Yeah.
So we want to enkindle love. And that's really our vision is, you know, the renewal of the church through people who have experienced a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ in the Eucharist.
Your Excellency, too, and just to be devil's advocate here for a moment or to be skeptical, yeah, developing programs for revival, right? Do they really work? And the reason I say that, I know Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict, they were both highly critical trying to make programs that so that people will believe. Your thoughts on that? I know it's not the program, but it's what's going to come from the program. But yeah, help me understand that. You know, there might be some who say, "Oh, yeah, programs have been tried; they've been failed. We need to do something else." But I don't know what the solution would be.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a program that we're about. That's why I like the word revival. Right. Really, you know, the Holy Fathers are, of course, right. The real way evangelization happens is one person sharing their love with another person, right? But we have to actually have to rekindle our love and invite people to come to a deeper understanding of our love in order for that to transform us. And so the church has always believed that at different moments we hold up certain truths and we catechize about them and we're intentional about preaching about them. And we think of Pope John Paul II himself who did a year of the Eucharist, right? Well, what was the purpose of that? It was to hold up this truth for the whole church so we reverence this gift. Or when Pope Benedict XVI did the year of priests, right?
Yeah.
What an incredible gift the priesthood is. We have to reverence it. And as bishops of the United States, what we're saying right now is here's this incredible gift. And as we can see from these politicians and others, it's not being reverenced. And so we want to hold up this gift so that the whole church can receive this gift anew. And in that way, grow in holiness through our own devotion.
Yeah, I love it. My guest today is His Excellency Bishop Andrew Cousins. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. I only have a few moments with him today. Our toll-free number is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Your Excellency, do you have another minute or two to stay?
I do, yep.
Great, love to talk with you. All right, let me take a short break. We'll come back. We'll take a few calls. We're talking more about something very exciting now looming on the horizon, a Eucharistic revival. And do me a favor, too. Put this on your prayer list, because we should be praying and fasting and sacrificing for the success of this. If we do that, I'm telling you what, the church will be on fire here in America. You're going to see a revival unlike anything you could ever have dreamed.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Fact-driven, faith-informed, unfiltered. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, well, thanks for joining me today. I'll go to the phones, grab a few of your calls. We're joined today by His Excellency Bishop Andrew Cousins. If you're just getting tuned in, let me bring you up to speed on what we're talking about. You know, we've been talking a lot, even back during the presidential run, about the faith of the president, right? President Biden's Catholic faith and Nancy Pelosi and a lot of other politicians as well. You might remember back in June when the USCCB got together, the bishops voted to draft a teaching document on the Eucharist. Soon afterwards, we had 60 Catholic House Dems challenge the bishops on the Eucharist. And Congressman Dan Lipinski was just with me a few moments ago. And if you missed that conversation, you ought to check it out. You can get it in my archives. Jake will have the show up in about an hour. Well worth listening to. But, you know, it's easy to lose hope. It's easy to get despondent. It's easy to think, oh, my gosh, you know, 2/3 of Catholics don't believe in the true presence. What's going to happen to the future of the church? And, you know, am I all alone? Well, I've got great hope for the future. You know, the U.S. bishops have gotten together. And they've decided to create a Eucharistic revival. They're going to create opportunities for you to become what they're calling a Catholic missionary. To understand, to experience Christ's presence in the Blessed Sacrament. And there's a goal of what they have is a three-year Eucharistic revival here in the U.S. And it's going to begin in the summer of 2022. We're going to ask you to pray for that. There'll be a website coming out. You'll get plugged into that as that gets closer. And then the initiative is going to culminate in 2024. It'll be a national event, and I'm telling you, the graces that are going to flow, the people on fire for love of Jesus Christ in the Eucharist, the hours of adoration that are going to be banked, the transformation and conversions that are going to abound are going to be absolutely amazing. And I think this is a great moment in the church, and you're here at the advent of it. You can be part of it, and we really invite you to do that. I really do, to proclaim Jesus Christ and to fall in love with the Eucharist. As I said, I am joined by His Excellency Bishop Andrew Cousins. He's the Auxiliary Bishop of the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and he chairs the Committee on Evangelization for the USCCB. And Your Excellency, before I jump into the phones, just a real quick question first. We talk about these numbers of Catholics who don't believe in the true presence. Numbers can be, they change. But I'd love your take as a shepherd on what, or maybe why. Why do you think, or let me rephrase that. What do you think is the primary reason that people have lost their faith in the Eucharist? I mean, why have so many people lost belief in this reality?
You know, I think it's been really a change in a worldview that's been affected so much by the secular culture that people don't see and understand transcendent realities. And they don't understand even what a sacrament is, and that the whole world is a sacrament, right?
Yep.
Everything we see in some way speaks of God's glory, it says in the book of Romans. And they don't understand how it could be that this simple piece of bread that looks like bread, but it's not bread anymore, could in fact bring to me the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. And it's really a transformation of a worldview that is different than the kind of scientistic worldview which we have in our culture, which says, you know, the only things that are true are things that I can prove. Well, nobody actually lives that way, right? I can't prove to you my mother loves me, but I know she does.
Great.
The truest things in the world are the things that we know by faith. And so people have lost that sense, especially, I think, because of secularization. And of course, all the other lack of catechesis, all the struggles, I think sometimes even as the church, we haven't helped the situation because the way we celebrate the Mass hasn't always pointed to the truth of who Jesus is and that Jesus' presence here. And all these are things that we want to strengthen as part of the revival.
Such a great point. All right, let's take a few calls. I only have His Excellency for a few moments. So if you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. Let's go to the City of Brotherly Love, Your Excellency. Teresa's listening to us there in Philadelphia. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Drew, and hi, Your Excellency. My question is, I'm very excited about this Eucharistic revival, and I've read about it, and I will certainly be praying for its success. And I know that myself, my members of my family, and my prayer group will be definitely signing up and participating in any kind of adult faith formations or additional hours of adoration. My only concern is that if the catechesis on the true presence is not actually preached during the homily at Sunday Mass, that the target for the message of what the Eucharist is going to be the choir, people that are already convinced of it. And so it just seems that the priests are limited on Sundays to preaching that Sunday's gospel. And so I think a lot of people leave Sunday Mass not really realizing the real presence because they haven't really heard that in the homily. So that's my concern, that is there's going to be all these wonderful things that the same people who sign up for everything participate and the message won't get down to the people that really need to hear it.
Thanks,
That's it.
Teresa. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you, Teresa. You know, you're exactly right. The real focus for this revival is the people who are already in the pew, but they don't fully understand. And the people who maybe aren't in the pew all the time, but if they did understand, they would be. And so we definitely want to help priests to learn how to preach about this in a way that people can understand. One of the beautiful things is sometimes the lectionary actually does that. This summer, for example, we have those 4 weeks where we talk about John chapter 6, which is a chapter of the Bible most dedicated to the Eucharist. It's our Lord's Bread of Life discourse. And so, you know, there's a real opportunity for priests to speak about the real presence in that time. But we'll find other opportunities as well and encourage people. You know, what we want to do is, of course, take people the next step, right? The good homily, but then we want to actually invite them into further study. And that's what we'll be encouraging the priests to do.
All right. Hey, Teresa, thank you for the call. It was good to hear from you. Appreciate it. And thanks for what you're doing. Mary's listening in Minnesota. She wants to join the conversation. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Hi, Your Excellency. I have a question in regards to the revival of the Eucharist, and I'm wondering if the reverence to the Eucharist would be incorporated by possibly bringing back in kneelers and or giving people that option to be able to kneel when they're receiving the sacrament of the Eucharist. I know that I enjoy doing that and sometimes genuflecting, but I know a lot of the older people would choose to do that, but they're not always, that's not available to them. And I also have a brother that has MS that would love to do that, but he said there's nothing available for that. But the reverence is there for some of us. It's just that we would like to be able to have that option also.
Okay.
You know, that's a great point, and it's certainly true that many bishops have said to me, as we've been planning this revival, that we need to deal with the question of reverence of the Eucharist. And that, you know, that affects everything about the way we celebrate the Eucharist. It affects the kind of music that we have. It affects the way the priest celebrates the Mass. It affects the architecture of our churches, you know. And so definitely there's a desire to deal with that. Of course, every pastor and also bishop, they deal with the particulars of that themselves. And so some pastors offer that option for kneeling while they're receiving communion. Certainly, though, the idea of we need to have reverent celebrations of the Eucharist is very clear for the bishops.
You know, to that point, I'm struck by what you said, and it's really true. And reverence is so important. And depending on what Mass you go to or who the priest is, I mean, you come away with a different sense of the reality of Christ in that celebration. But you said the music may have to change and even the architecture. Are we going to see a ripple effect from this? After this revival, will we see perhaps changes?
Yeah, I sure hope so. You know, I know bishops have talked about, you know, we need to do training better of liturgical musicians.
Yeah.
We need to do training better of liturgical architects. We need to take account of where we are with our belief in the Eucharist and understand that in order to turn this around, some things may have to change in that sense. And of course, there are many, many, many different beautiful ways to celebrate the Eucharist and beautiful places to celebrate the Eucharist. But that reverence always has to be key because here we're touching heaven and we're entering into a transcendent reality. And we want to make sure that people understand that.
That's so true. Al's listening in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Al, thank you for joining us. You're on the air with Bishop Andrew Cousins.
Thank you, Drew. I love you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Love you back.
Divine Mercy and the Rosary in the Evening, two of my favorites every day. But here's the thing. That lady was just on. I agree with what she's saying, that you have to tell people that. If you're just having a revival, you are preaching to the choir. So my little slight take on that, and I'm 74, so I've lived through the whole birth control thing, and I supported the church all along.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to say it. The priest, each and every Mass, somewhere right before that, or you know, not buried in the homily or some little thing. We are Catholics. If you're not a Catholic, don't come up.
Right.
To take it. You know, you got to say, this is the body of Christ. Right. It's not a symbol.
Right.
Same thing. If you are Catholics and you're living in mortal sin,
right,
unrepentant, don't take it. And that includes, you're going to have to say the tough stuff, birth control. Living with somebody.
It's a great point.
You know what I'm saying?
Let His Excellency respond to you. I think we get your point. I think you're absolutely right. It would be great. I think a lot of people don't know that. They don't observe the Eucharistic fast. I mean, you take a look at how short confession lines are and how long communion lines are. To be able to receive the Lord worthily is really important. And you know, Your Excellency, I just think there's a lot of people who either don't know what's required of them, or they have not been to confession in a long time, and it has desensitized them to whatever sin that they are in, and they think, the Lord understands, I'm going to receive him because it's okay. So, I mean, to Al's point, and I don't know what the proper forum for this is, to educate people on worthy reception.
You know, one of the ways it's come up amongst the bishops in our conversations has been the connection between the sacrament of penance or confession and the Eucharist, and that we need to highlight that connection, and that you're not going to have a Eucharistic revival if you don't have a revival of the sacrament of penance, because they go together. The origin of the sacrament of penance, it begins in history because people had committed sins which separated them from communion, and they needed to be reconciled to that, and so they came to the bishop to confess their sins, you know, and from that, the sacrament of penance developed. And so we definitely need to highlight that. And I remember even I did a consultation in this process with Father Rocky, and he said to me, well, I had a revival of my faith in the Eucharist after a good confession. When I went and made a good confession, all of a sudden there was grace, and I recognized what was going on here in the Eucharist, you know, and so we definitely have to highlight that connection.
And I guess they go hand in hand, don't they? The sacrament of reconciliation, that great sacrament of mercy, As we have this Eucharist revival, I think you're going to also see more people getting back once they understand and comprehend the enormity of what happens there during transubstantiation. So, hey, Your Excellency, thank you. I really appreciate you being with us. Our lines are stacked. People would love to talk with you. We'll have you back. I'm going to champion this cause, and if we can be of service to you, please don't hesitate to let us know, okay?
Thank you, Drew, and please have everybody pray for this revival, because prayer is going to be the real engine that drives it.
It really is. Thank you. That's His Excellency Bishop Andrew Cousins. He's got to run. I don't want to honor his time. Otherwise, boy, I'd keep him here to the last second. We'll bring him back again with us. But I love what he said, and on that thought, let's, you know, I believe prayer changes things. You know that, right? You know, I believe that. I know you believe that too. We can do our part. Small sacrifices, prayer, spending time with the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. Let's pray for the success of this, because what you're doing when you pray for the success of this, you're not only praying for the success of the church, you're praying for those wayward loved ones of yours, and you're praying for this great nation of ours. There is a revival looming on the horizon. We are at the very beginning of it. You know, it's a journey we'll take together, but be part of this historic moment, I believe, in the church in America. All right? That begins with prayer, though. That's what animates everything. I'll take a short break. I'm out of time for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow. Can't wait to talk to you then.